listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. I'm really pleased to have with me once again Kevin Duffy. Kevin is a principal of Baring Asset Management, which he co-founded in 2002, and he had a tremendous track record during the last bear market, the big one, 2008-2009, the financial crisis. And so not a lot of people made a lot of money, but Kevin and his Baring Asset Management was one firm that did, and so we think it might be very timely to have him with us today. But Kevin has also learned how to make money in good markets, and that was something he had a bit more trouble with and had to learn how to do it. And it seems as though, from what I'm understanding about the performance of the coffee can portfolio, he's done very well with that as well. So I'm really pleased to have Kevin with us again. And I should say, before I say hello to Kevin, it's the coffeecanportfolio.com. thecoffeecanportfolio.com. Go there to learn more about his letter. It is very reasonably priced, I might add, and lots of good information in there, I think, that might be very helpful to many of you. So, Kevin, thanks for joining me today.
Jay, thanks for having me back on.
It's really good to have you with us, and I want to ask you just maybe to start out with, before we get to your investment philosophy and how you've learned to make money in good markets as well as bad, just your view of the markets in general right now? I mean, I think, you know, Michael Oliver was on with us earlier, and he sort of agreed that the U.S. equity markets are perhaps the most overvalued they've ever been, maybe notwithstanding recent weakness. But just give us your idea about the economy, the global economy, the U.S. economy, and just markets in general.
Sure. Well, I think if we step back to before the pandemic and then what's happened since, that was really the excuse for a tremendous amount of economic stimulus. We got about $5 to $6 trillion in stimulus and of course there was a lot of pork involved in that. So for every $1 in stimulus checks, about $8 went to special interests. Since the end of 2019, government spending has climbed about 21%. Public debt has gone from $23 trillion to almost $29 trillion. And, of course, we've had a big increase in the Fed's balance sheet from $4 trillion to not quite $9 trillion. So really, a pretty significant increase in the Fed's balance sheet. In fact, if we go back to 2008, the increase in the Fed's balance sheet was about 8% of GDP, and this time it's about 18% of GDP. Hmm. And I think it's a combination of not only all the stimulus, but in trying to basically lock down and shut down an economy and reopen it, and all of the incentives and disincentives that were involved really caused a lot of problems last year. Also, economists estimated that about a third of the stimulus money went into the stock market. So it really unleashed a tidal wave of speculation, unlike anything we have seen really since 2000. So we got this incredible boom in venture capital, record venture capital money last year, IPOs, of course, the SPACs. So you got this wild speculation that really peaked around January and February of last year. So if we look at the net new highs in the market, NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange, that peaked in February last year of plus 2,000 roughly. And since then, we've had a really significant deterioration in the stocks that the retail investor was speculating in, the meme mm-hmm. stocks. GameStop is down 67% from its high. AMC down 69%. ARC, a lot of money went into the Cathie Wood ARC Invest funds. The ARC Innovation ETF has been cut in half since then. So we've really had this sort of stealth bear market, I think, since February of last year. And yet the retail investor has refused to leave the casino. So, you know, there has been last year margin debt went up 18%, and the margin debt is at an all-time high, got up to 4% of GDP. And if we look at the last couple of bubbles, just for perspective, they were at about 3% of GDP. So, you know, I think we've had the party. Last year was this crazy party, and this year we're starting to get the hangover.
Well, a hangover, but so far, you know, in the past, as you pointed out, a rich uncle, that'd be Jay Powell, I guess, in the Federal Reserve, has always been there to sort of keep things going. But you're suggesting that's not likely to be the case this time?
Yeah, so we have a real problem with, you know, inflation is starting to bubble up. And, you know, it's interesting to go back to something like the Barron's Roundtable last year, and everybody was sort of pimping for stimulus and don't worry, inflation is contained, or price inflation more accurately. And at first the feds thought that it was transitory, and you know, now that that inflation genie is kind of out of the bag. We've got 7% year-over-year CPI, which is the highest since 1982. And so the Fed is starting to backtrack. And the problem is that, you know, the starting point, we're at basically 0% Fed funds rate. The 10-year Treasury is now pushing 2%, so 1.86%. I think probably the best indicator, one of the best indicators of just how cheap money is the 10-year TIPS yield, which got under negative 1%. So basically the federal government is able to borrow money for, you know, less than the implied inflation rate. And, you know, this should really be going to a plus 1%, plus 2%, maybe plus 3%. So we've got, you know, I personally think that some of the supply chain issues will resolve themselves. I think we will get beyond COVID, and some of the labor issues will resolve themselves, but not all of them, certainly. I think we will be stuck with a sort of a nagging and chronic inflation. But with the 10-year Treasury at 1.86% and CPI at 7%, even if that were to pull back, if we go to positive real rates, you know, we're going to have to see the 10-year go up, I don't know, you know, 4 or 5%, up to 4 or 5%. So I think the Fed's hands right now are tied, and I think the market is starting to kind of connect these dots. You know, the real problem is in companies that are really the growth part of the market. The growthier stocks, and then especially firms, the money-losing tech unicorns, you know. So we're getting this shift, definitely, and it's really been back towards value. So this year, for example, just year to date, you know, if you go back over the last 5 years, growth has really outperformed value, and this is in part because of the low interest rate environment. I think, you know, the shift that's going on, we're still probably early innings in all this. And year to date, the Russell 1000 growth index is down about 7%, with the Russell 1000 value index about flat. Now, to put that in perspective, the growth index over the past 5 years outperformed the value index by about 18% per year. Oh. So I think we're still very early in this shift from, you know, from growth to value.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, I just have to wonder. I mean, if interest rates continue to rise, and you know, you've got pension funds and junk bonds and in margin and munis and in the stock market too, because they couldn't get any yields in safe treasuries anymore. Doesn't that put a tremendous amount of pressure on the Fed to do something to start juicing it up again?
I think they're boxed in. I really feel that right now the problem is that they have lost control of price inflation. Mm-hmm. And I think that is really tying their hands. I feel that they are way behind the curve. And I'm not saying that that the Fed won't panic at the next crisis, but it's going to take a crisis. And I think the next crisis has to be that the stimulus drug wears off, which I believe it will. And I believe at some point, and I don't know whether it's S&P 500 down, you know, 10%, 20%, 50%, but I think it's got to be a combination of serious weakness in the stock market and also a global recession. That's what it will take. But right now, I think we're in a period right now where I think the Fed's hands are severely tied. Mm-hmm. When you have CPI running at 7%, mm-hmm. and you know, the 10-year under 2%, I mean, that's negative 5% real yields. Mm-hmm. There's just not much they can do.
No. Well, Kevin, you had at Barings Asset Management, you did extremely well in the financial crisis 2008-2009. Real quickly, how did you do that? How did you manage to make so much money at that point in time?
Well, what we focused on was where we thought the bubble was. And I think, you know, one of the lessons that I have learned is that it's a market of stocks, not a stock market. Mm-hmm. And so we can focus on all the negatives. We're in this everything bubble today. You know, back then, we recognized that the tech bubble had been replaced. And that was really a bubble in first mover advantage. And that's where the big shakeout took place in 2000 to 2002. But, you know, in that tech bubble was replaced with a housing and a credit bubble. And we felt like that it was a bubble and that the extenders of credit were going to be hit hardest. And so we basically, you know, we made a pretty big bet in terms of some shorts, but mostly put options on the too big to fail banks, the home builders, the subprime lenders, that sort of thing. And, mm-hmm. and it was, you know, here's another thing that I think is important and kind of explains how we were able to do what we did, that the unraveling of a bubble tends to be a process. It doesn't tend to be an event. So what you had was waves. You had waves of, at first it was the subprime bubble bursting, and then there was a lot of talk about how that was isolated and contained. And so what happened was you get this casino effect where the speculators refuse to leave the casino, and even though the craps table shuts down, they come back in and they drive other things up. So what happened was we were getting this, we would make money, let's say, shorting the subprime bubble, and then other areas would bubble up and we would short those. So it was kind of like waiting for a wave to ride. We'd ride that, get on our surfboard, go back out, ride another one. And so there were opportunities to actually compound on the short side. Mm-hmm. During that whole period from really beginning in 2007 to about the, you know, really the fourth quarter of 2008.
Mm-hmm. So then you, I think, as I recall, you know, adjusting then to a market that had stabilized, you had to make some changes in your thinking, I believe, which leads me to your sort of general philosophy of investing, if you'd like to just talk about that. Because as I understand it, you've done very well with the coffee can portfolio. So give us your general philosophy, your investment philosophy now.
Yeah, you know, I will admit that, you know, I stayed at the party too long. I stayed short way too long, and it was extremely costly. It kind of forced a meet Jesus moment and going back and rethinking everything. I mean, I had to just take it right down to the foundation. And so that's why one reason why I started writing the newsletter, and I have come up with a number of rules. And you know what? One of the things that I'm trying to do is really focus on getting back balance. That even though you have bubbles, bubbles create anti-bubbles, so they create mm-hmm. opportunities on the long side. Mm-hmm. And as far as the philosophy, there's really we're in a game. The investment game is what I like to call it. And anytime you're in a game, you're competing with other people. So you need to know what your advantage is. What is your unfair advantage? And part of that is knowing yourself, getting to really understand yourself, and also knowing who else is around you. So when we see novices enter the game, you know, our eyes kind of get like spaghetti plates. But you know, getting back to where, at least where I felt I had an edge, and part of it is understanding where you don't have an edge. I absolutely have no edge in the short term. I'm a horrible trader. I have no idea what's going to happen, you know, from minute to minute or day to day or month to month. But so the first part was to just focus on the long term. And the coffee can idea was to look out 10 years. But, you know, I like to look, I'm not saying that every position in the portfolio looks out that long, but at least the coffee can section of the portfolio, which is about 30%, are companies that I feel like if the market shut down tomorrow, I'd be willing to own these stocks for 10 years, for a decade. Okay, so the long term is the first part of it. The second part of it is to be a generalist, to really cast a wide net. I think that most investors tend to be specialists. I think this industry has become incredibly specialized. And so what I realized, so for example, some people call themselves value investors, some people call themselves growth investors, and I'm both. I'm not married to either one. So if growth stocks happen to be on sale, or I find things that interest me in the growth aisle, then I'm going to go shopping there. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to cast a wide net, have flexibility, and have a lot of tools in your toolbox. You know, when you're so narrowly focused, you know, all you have is a hammer and everything looks like a nail. Yeah. The third part of where I think we can get a competitive edge is being a contrarian. You know, avoiding the crowd, being skeptical of the crowd, being aware of simple narratives. And when something like this comes along, like the stimulus is going to work, or the vaccines are the magic bullet, you know, to step back and look for the nuance, be skeptical of that. I think if you just focus on the crowd and you pick apart their narratives, it's a great way to be an above average investor. And then the fourth part of the philosophy is to, and I think this is contrarian in itself, is to look at the world through a non-interventionist or an Austrian lens. And I think most people in this business, a lot of very successful people, are really interventionists. So they fall for scams like the stimulus. You know, they really believe this would work. I think it also teaches us to avoid companies and industries that are highly dependent on the government, like defense companies or electric vehicles right now, and also avoid companies that are dependent on cheap credit, because mm-hmm. Like the money-losing tech unicorns that I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
All right, Kevin, we just have maybe a minute and a half here yet, and we could go another hour, I think, with everything here. But for example, you have these themes, and I should tell people, get Kevin's letter. I think it's $109 a year, something like that, Kevin. Is that right? It's very inexpensive.
Yes, it's $109. I publish six times a year. And part of that is because I like to just step back and not get caught up in the day to day.
All right.
So the themes, There are about a dozen themes, Jay, and we obviously we don't have a lot of enough time to go into them. I mentioned the fact that I think value stocks are going to outperform. So one of the themes is that active managers have been just destroyed over the past 5 years. And, for example, and passive investing has been the wave. So BlackRock trades at a little over 7 times revenue, whereas Franklin Resources trades at 2 times revenue. You know, so that's, an opportunity to look in that area.
Okay, we're gonna have to leave it go at that, Kevin. But I just say there's so many themes, and folks, sign up for Kevin's letter. I suppose you can give them the last letter if they sign up, Kevin. But there's so many great ideas in here. We just don't have time. My my engineer is saying we're 30 seconds, so we have to leave it go at that. But it is again the website is I guess it's thecoffeecanportfolio.com, right, Kevin?
That's it.
All right, folks. Well, we have to leave it go at that. So that is all the time we have. Next week, we're going to be talking to John Rubino, and Patrick Highsmith will be back with us to talk about Firefox Gold. Until then, goodbye, and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Firefox Gold is exploring in Finland in the midst of an exciting new gold rush. Firefox successfully drilled high-grade and visible gold in 2021 and is now active at 4 prospective projects with plans to drill continuously through the first half of 2022. The company's strong international leadership team, combined with its Finland-based exploration specialists, are driving the company to discovery, and the stage is set for Firefox to identify multiple new gold deposits. Firefox Gold trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol FFOX and on the OTCQB at FFOXF. Go to firefoxgold.com to subscribe for updates.